Before we get to today's show, I'd like to invite you to become a part of this show. If you have hiked the John Muir Trail, whether you section hiked it or through hiked it, or if you intend to hike it in the future, then give us a call, 818-925-0106, and please leave a voicemail telling us a little bit about your experience, a memory, a hardship, what you're looking forward to, or how it affected your life positively or even negatively. At the end of this season, I am hoping to collect these voice messages and edit them into an episode focused on the John Muir Trail. So if you would like to potentially have your voicemail appear on the show, call us up, 818-925-0106. Leave us your name, whether that is your real name or your trail name, where you are located, and give us your thoughts within 3 minutes about the John Muir Trail. Thank you ahead of time, and let's get to the show. Everybody, welcome to episode 92 of the Go Get Outside podcast. This is your host, Jason Milligan. Welcome back. Welcome aboard. Welcome to 2020. Today's episode is a great day to start the new year off right. We will be having a roundtable discussion with Team Chickaboom. That is Cindy Wyatt, Marilee Valcaz, and Severia Tilden. And we will be talking about embracing your discomfort zone. This is a good episode for friends and family who you've been trying to get outdoors, or even just great reminders for those of you who already spend a lot of time outdoors. This is an episode about the benefits of nature, dealing with fear, finding partners, being a good companion yourself, developing responsibility, tempering expectations, and more. One of the big hurdles for many people who are starting to get outdoors is dealing with discomfort, and something we say on this show all the time is get comfortable with being uncomfortable, and you will open up a whole new world for yourself. And that is specifically what today's roundtable discussion is about. So that is enough from me. Let's go talk to Team Chickaboom.
Hi, my name is Marilee Valcaz, and I work for REI. I'm an outdoor educator. I work on the retail sales floor, and I am an adventurer. I've been an adventurer for, let's just say, many decades.
Hi, my name is Cindy Wyatt. I'm a sales lead at REI. I also am an ultra runner and an event director for trail running and hiking.
Hello, my name is Severia Tilden, and I am the CEO and founder of Adventurous Woman, which is an event series by women and for women, and also an online community.
All right, so the thing we're here to talk about today, right, is it's difficult to get people outdoors sometimes because of the fact that they're going to be uncomfortable. As soon as you tell somebody, oh, we're going to go camping, if they haven't been camping before, they think, well, I'm not going to be able to sleep with my bed, it's going to be dirty. There are going to be all these things that make me miserable because they equate discomfort with misery and therefore a bad time. But something we talk about on the show, and something that I know you all recognize as well, is that when you get comfortable with being uncomfortable, it opens up an entire new world for you where you have all these new opportunities and you can have these new experiences. So let's talk to people first about why discomfort isn't such a bad thing.
So I wanted to ask the question, you know, what do these things have in common? A lightning strike while you're on the mountain, riding a roller coaster, running a marathon, you spill coffee on your lap and you're heading for a major presentation. All these things are stressors in our life. And what I wanted to talk about today is how nature actually empowers you so that when these stressors of our daily life happen, how it becomes a lot easier to cope with. I always say, a lot of us always say, like, oh, nature's so empowering. It's empowering women, empowerment, you know, but why? Why is nature like the heal all? So that's the question I really wanted to open up today. Like, what happens in the outdoors that really gives us a better attitude and in our daily life?
I think that's a very good question. And I think that the empowerment aspect is, you know, I think very unique to different people based on your experiences. You know, when you find yourself caught in the civilization bubble, as I always call it, you know, and you're stressed out about things and, you know, it's kind of like this very innate stress, life or death, you know, but when you get out in nature, it kind of puts everything in perspective, because you go out there, and if it's your first time, your first camping trip, for instance, and you're afraid you're going to be cold, and you're afraid of spiders and bears and animals, and you get out there, and you go out there with some of your friends, and you actually survive it, that really changes your whole world, like your whole perspective on, oh my gosh, okay, it's not as bad as I expected it, and it just kind of puts it all in perspective. Right?
I think the beauty of nature is that it's unpredictable. And I think in today's day and age, one of the reasons that we are so stressed in our regular lives and in that civilization bubble is because we kind of can control everything. We can control what we watch, what we hear, what we see. We can create these bubbles. And sometimes it's an echo chamber that just kind of creates the stress. And you can sort of, in a lot of ways, you can control your environment. It's, you know, how hot you are, how cold you are, your air conditioning in the house or not in the house. You know, there's your entire life is in a lot of ways controllable. And when you get out in nature, there's a lot of things that are out of your control. So no matter how much you plan and prepare, which is always super important, there's always this element of not knowing what's going to happen. Like, you don't exactly know what every trip is going to be like. And I have this theory of, like, it's not just like plan A, like, I'm going for a hike today. It's like, well, this is a hike I want to go on today. But I also want to have a plan B and a plan C, because who knows, maybe weather comes in, maybe it's too hot for my dog, maybe my friends who I'm with are way faster than me or way slower than me, or, you know, maybe it's a perfect day. So I think it just, when you're out in nature, there's something empowering about knowing that there's always going to be these elements of surprise, because you can't control it. There's just certain things about nature you can't control. And so you just sort of have to be comfortable with the uncomfortable of, like, needing to make decisions or changing plans or, you know, all those things. So,
you know, that's like a really good point, because I think in our civilization bubble, there are a lot of artificial rules that we have to navigate around. And if we don't live up to those, then, you know, your whole world is going to come crashing down, because people aren't going to like you. Your boss is going to be upset. But, you know, I think to your point, Severia, it's important that when you are outside, you have to be adaptable. You have to be flexible. You can start hiking up that mountain, but as soon as you see thunderclouds start to form, then, you know, it's time to retreat, go back down. We got to do something else. Maybe we go to the lowlands. But it's that ability to take control of your life and make decisions that are in your best interest that is really, to me, very empowering. You learn that it's not the end of the world if you don't make that summit, because oftentimes it's going to lead to some other adventure that you didn't anticipate.
Yeah, which is why many companies use nature as leadership tool. Another point you brought up, Severia, that I wanted to talk about, I believe we have more stressors in our life because we get news all the time via Twitter, email, you know, even from, like, you know, our family members. Like, things are coming at us, like, from all directions, and this just adds to our stressors and what makes it so important to get out in nature and have that balance so you can manage all this.
Yeah, it definitely helps to relieve the chatter. I always find that when I get in my car and I drive up to this Eastern Sierra, and as I approach the mountains, you know, the chatter does start to fade away. And of course, you know, it takes usually a good solid day out in the wilderness for that chatter to really diminish a lot. But I don't take music when I go in the backcountry. I maybe every once in a while we'll take a book and we'll read something inspirational, but it's that, you know, just being completely cut off from all the noise.
Yeah, I'd like to thank Mother Nature for cutting off the Wi-Fi.
Right, for sure.
And
yeah, right. Absolutely, yeah, for now. Well, unless you have satellite, but then that's a whole other deal. But that's a huge part of being out and just completely cutting yourself. And then you can actually think for yourself and not be under the influence of, you know, the radio telling you that, you know, you're not skinny enough and that you have to buy this product and that product you know, yada, yada, yada. So,
yeah, I think removing all the chatter, like the way you said that, all the chatter. Like, I used to remember when I first started getting into all this, I would stress about that moment when I lost my bars on my phone. I'd stress about the, like, but there's so, the emails, the work, like, all the stuff that was going to pile up when I was gone, like, couldn't check. And I used to, like, I'd, like, just hang on to that last moment and that last bar. And now I'm like, when can it be gone soon enough? When can it be gone soon enough? Like, how quickly can I lose my bars? Or I just put in airplane mode early because it's like, I just know now, having been out enough, like, that you just can become so much more present when you lose all that chatter, right? When you just are sort of in the moment, when you're not checking your phone, when you're not checking your social media, when you're not, you know, wondering if somebody's texting you or all that kind of stuff. You know, everybody knows you're gone for the weekend. You're not going to be reachable. And so it just allows you to be so much more present. And I think there's a lot of empowerment in that. And when you're present in those moments, sometimes, like, you're seeing things you like and sometimes you don't like. You're realizing it's like you have these moments where you're actually able to think and clear your head. And what is it about that life at home in the city that you love and don't like? And so there's sort of this empowering feeling of kind of getting to know yourself again when you're in nature and you have those moments of, like, being able to really think and think about who you are. And when you're in nature, normally if you're someplace without cell reception, it means that you're probably in, like, a mountain or a canyon or someplace that's a little bit remote. And so there's also this self-reliance that's happening. So there's, you know, you can't just Google it. You can't just, you know, Postmates your food, or I don't know what people are using these days, right? DoorDash. Like, I don't know, like, you know, things aren't just going to show up. So you sort of have to rely on the fact that the stuff on your back or the stuff in your backpack and you, like, you as a person are what you're relying on. And that's a really empowering thing. And that not everything is going to go right. Things are going to go a little bit wrong and you're going to have your challenges and things are going to be hard and you're going to get that blister. And it's going to cut, you know, moments of it may not be like the beautiful Instagram photo that somebody promised you. But at the end of the day, like, think about how much you've accomplished on your own. Like, I mean, Jason, you just went on the JMT. I mean, how long were you on that?
26 days.
Yeah, 26 days basically surviving and living with what you carry on your back, you know, and having, you know, food drops or whatever. Like, there's planning that went into that. But how amazing is that, that in today's day and age, you can go and spend a month totally, you know, off grid, just surviving, relying on yourself. Like, how empowering is that?
Cindy mentioned, like, dealing with everyday stressors. And then you mentioned, like, trying to control things, Severia. And this brings me to something that I find kind of ironic, which is in everyday life, I have a harder time because I know I can control things, letting go when things don't go the way they should. And so I always struggle with just getting super frustrated with things falling apart because they were mismanaged or whatever. Whereas as soon as I go outside where I know I have no control over everything, because subconsciously I understand that if I get mad at the weather, it can't change. Or if I get mad at something that's broken, it can't be fixed, and that it doesn't help me. I am able to let go of that stress. And so even though for something like doing the JMT where everything that's with me is important, I have to rely on myself and the other people on the trail, I actually find it less stressful because it's just easier for me to accept that this is the reality, and I can either get stressed and freak out and have a meltdown and make everything worse, or I can just deal with it right there and move forward. And I find it much easier to do that in the wilderness, quote unquote, where it's supposed to be, quote unquote, more dangerous.
That's because nature kills the ego.
I like that.
And in, you know, the civilization bubble, we are driven so much by ego. And that's our performance, our fear of not being accepted, or maybe it's just fear of not being able to deliver something that we promised, which that's not a great thing to have happen, but it can happen, right? Due to, you know, various circumstances. But then ultimately we're held accountable. But I think to your point, Jason, it's when you're out in the wilderness, you know you're not in control. You're in control of your decisions, your choices, which is a very powerful thing, an important thing. But ultimately, you're not going to control what the weather's going to do. You're not going to control whether there's going to be a bear that comes through your campsite. However, there are things you can do to, you know, reduce certain things, right? But those are all choices that you make. But it's a very simple way of living. You have just what you have on your back. You wander to your next destination, and, you know, what comes along is going to come along, and the rest of it's just up to you, the decisions you make and how well you prepared. But ultimately, that's what it comes down to. It's not what I have other than, you know, my necessities, but it's very, very simple living.
And I would just even say, like, these lessons don't necessarily have, you don't have to go into the backcountry to sort of learn how to be flexible in these ways. So I just did an event at the end of September and in Bend, Oregon, and seasonal, like, averages are in the 70s, blue sky, it's Eastern Oregon, it's supposed to be gorgeous. We had weather come in, we had snow, we had, like, lows in, during the day in the 40s and 50s, and so it was, like, really adverse conditions, and it would have been really easy to just sort of say, well, the weather's not what I imagined it, or it's not perfect, and we have to change, like, we can't do all the things that we wanted to do. And we just sort of, all the women just sort of rallied. Like, we just were like, this is what it is. It's not what we expected. We're going to be better and stronger because of it. We had, you know, dinner outside when it was snowing around us. Like, we were undercover, but there was, like, snow falling around us. And it was this beautiful experience. And, you know, did we have plan Bs? Yeah. So we were doing yoga in rooms instead of out on the grass. Great. I think it just sort of showed that you can still have these amazing experiences and be flexible. And sometimes you just need to go to that plan B or that plan C. In this case, there was some C's, maybe even a D, but, you know, like, instead of hiking to the mountain that we knew was covered in snow, the women went caving, which wasn't even on our radar when we showed up at this event. And it was, like, mind-blowing. Like, women were like, this was the best experience of my life. And it was because you were just flexible and you were okay with, I signed up for A, but we're doing B. Okay,
or
cool.
C or D.
Yeah, or C or D.
When people come back from these trips, they don't talk about how they went on a trip and everything went right and it was exactly as they expected and it was so great. They come back and talk about when things went wrong and everyone adjusted and came up with a solution, and then something they didn't even expect ended up being their favorite memory of the trip. When you kind of give up that control and recognize you can't control it and then just move with it, it's really freeing, and then it leads to experiences that are better than those you would make for yourself.
I have a group of girls and we do our annual backpacking trip together, and for probably the last 3 years our backpacking trips have been thwarted. First year there was so much snowfall that we couldn't get across the creeks in the spring to reach our destination, so we camped where we were, you know, decided on a new plan. We, you know, hiked back down and we wound up doing these amazing hikes. We camped and we did these day hikes and we explored places that we hadn't been. Next year, we tried to do the same thing, a similar route again, backpacking trip, fires came. There's just, you know, soot in the air, ash everywhere. We're like, gosh, you know, this mountain is just not having us.
It's
so
kinda like
same
snow.
Thing, yeah. Right. You know, and then, so this year, We were going to do the North Lake, South Lake loop. The weather decided that it was going to just act up, and we had high winds, we had snow, we also had a search and rescue event that we had to help with. But ultimately, you know, we laugh at this stuff now because, again, it's like we don't put so much stock in, oh my gosh, it's got to be this. We want to do that. That's kind of our dream. But you know what? Like I said, whenever it falls through, we always adapt and end up having a more memorable time. And we come out, you know, I think stronger, you know, for knowing that, look, life isn't always going to go your way. And that's just not how it happens, even though we try. But if you can just get over that and just go with the flow, then it makes your whole life easier.
Cindy, I'd ask you, like, as an ultra runner, because, I mean, you're doing these long distance runs, usually in remote places. Like, how do you sort of face the challenges of the uncertainty or things, you know, not going as planned in what's supposed to be a planned event, right? So it seems like, well, but it's planned. There's a route, all those things. Like, how do you deal with that?
Well, definitely overcoming a lot of fears and being okay with the uncertainty. But definitely I have felt like the empowerment afterward, I'm pretty sure I stared down two mountain lions in the Colorado San Juans, you know. But there's a lot of, like, ultra running, there's a lot of experiences that can happen. You can go off trail. So now we're lost. You're running in the darkness through the night. Did I miss that flag? Did you see those eyes? Did you hear that? It really, you know, gets your heart racing. And I think that's what is a little bit thrilling about ultra running and doing things that, and kind of like pushing yourself to do things that scare you a little bit, because it really grounds me more when I'm back in my daily life. And you brought up earlier about being present. Isn't that like everybody's goal in America? Like, you hear it all the time. Like, I just wish I was more present. And I think we answered the first why nature is so empowering from this discussion is, okay, you can be a little bit more present. And, you know, being okay with unpredictable things that come up. You're kind of pretty vulnerable out there.
It kind of really helps you understand your fears better. And I think that when you're out in nature, and there are some real things to be afraid of, like lightning. Nobody wants to be struck by lightning. That is a real, genuine, bona fide fear that you should have. When you reflect on what you experience in Mother Nature, which is just rife with many things to be afraid of, when you look back on your daily life and you're like, well, why am I afraid to, you know, pick up the phone and call somebody? And, you know, what is this? This fear is not really real. It's not what's really at stake here. It's not my life. It's my ego.
I wonder if part of it is like the recognition that ego is something inside of you and therefore it isn't a risk to your life. And so then when you can tell yourself, not that most of the time you're in the outdoors, you're really at risk of death or anything, but you do know that the consequences can be larger. It does sort of help you put that in perspective where you're like, well, if my confidence or my ego gets hit a little bit, then I'll bounce back and I will learn to deal with that. But if this breaks my leg or if I don't have food tomorrow, those consequences are a lot higher. Yeah, maybe the little hits to my ego don't matter so much in the long run.
It's not going to kill me.
And, you know, it's funny. I think of ego as this like, I can do it or I can't do it. Like ego is sort of like a bravado sort of like kind of thing. But I think another way to look at it is just that inner self-doubt, right? So maybe it's not your ego that's keeping you from going out or your ego that's saying like, it's more self-doubt. It's like, am I going to be good enough? Am I going to be fast enough? Am I going to be able to do this? Am I going to look silly? And so there's like a gentler like side of the ego too, which is like your ego isn't necessarily like how strong am I or all those things, but it's just sort of like, you know, our egos are fragile and it's there's just sort of this, you know, you don't want, nobody wants to look stupid. Nobody
fear
wants
of vulnerability.
Yeah, the vulnerability, right? Like you're just scared of showing up. Like if I show up, is everybody going to be faster, stronger, skinnier than me? I encourage people to like find environments where you can kind of come as you are and show up in a way that you can be yourself, because I think that's another beautiful thing about the outdoors. You can find your own adventure. When we, you know, we talk about the outdoors, and a lot of times the outdoors is something epic. It's this mountaintop. It's the JMT, by the way, for people who don't know, is the John Muir Trail, and it's how many miles, Jason?
Officially 211, but most people have to do a lot more. I ended up doing about 260.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's a couple hundred miles. I think Cindy's done it as well. And have you done
that
it, Marley?
No, I have not
done the entire trail.
Yeah. 211 miles only makes you end at the top of the highest peak. And then
right, so then you fly off and you're good.
Yeah,
so
and
you're
there's no beer unless you carry it up
until you get down to the pancake at the portal. I think that's another thing, too, is when we're talking about like the outdoors and how you can use it to find empowerment, just remember that there's all these like intermediate ways to or beginner ways to enjoy the outdoors. And so I think the important thing is to find your own adventure, so to make sure that the experiences that you're having are empowering for you and that they are challenging you, because I think that's a big part of the outdoors is making sure that you're challenged, but in a way that's healthy, in a way that's like getting you out of your comfort zone. We talked a little bit about this, like, you know, being uncomfortable is fine. Putting your life at risk is not. So find the adventure that works for you and start somewhere.
Yeah. Just showing up, like you just go to Yosemite National Park, go up to Glacier Point, take in the view. And that in and of itself is very life changing because you're standing in awe of this amazing valley with these amazing rock formations, and it makes you feel very small, and it just reminds you Mother Nature's in charge, not me, not my boss, not anybody else.
Yeah, just sleeping in a tent overnight with just nylon separating you from whatever else is out there in your imagination that could cook up can be quite empowering. Like I spoke to a woman that came in the store recently, and she says, I went out on my first like trip because I outfitted her, and she came back and she's like, the winds were crazy and my tent was flapping, and she's just like, it was the best night of my life. It wasn't really what I was expecting her to say, but so proud of her, and that she was with other women, and they all just bound together in this experience. And I know they'll talk about it for years, and she's just radiating with joy. So super cool.
Well, what you're talking about there is what we were talking about earlier, which is she was in a situation where she couldn't control it. She kind of had to give up that control, but then also things went not as she expected. They dealt with it. And then she realized, oh, number one, it's not that scary. It's not that bad. Number two, we can deal with it. And number three, when we do, we realize how enjoyable and the positive side of the ego, how then it helps build that. where she realizes like, oh, now I know that I can do this. Now I have this confidence to do this in the future, or maybe more.
I think too, it's important to surround yourself with people who are, you know, positive and have good attitudes. And so recently I was on a trip that did not go as planned, and I had to walk out somebody who had been injured. And so, and then somebody was with me and we walked back in. And so he was more of a beginner, and I was in the Sierra. I hadn't scouted the part that we knew we were going to come back at night. But we did, and it was all on trail. So like, it was all going to be fine, but I hadn't scouted it. I hadn't been on the section of trail before. I was going to be doing it at night. I personally don't like hiking at night because like, I don't like little eyes staring at me in the middle of the woods. So like, I'm not a huge fan of hiking at night. And so like, so my nervous and my uncomfort level, like even though I knew we had a map, we had the GPS, like everything technically was fine. Like I'm not comfortable hiking in the dark. And it was really fun hiking with this other person who also had never hiked in the dark because this was one of his like second backpacking trip ever. And I would hear him behind me go, oh, and I'd be like, are you okay? It's like, look at the sunset. And he would just like stop. And like, and I was so focused on the task at hand, you know, and sort of in my head. And he'd be like, oh, and I'd be like, what? Like, look at the stars. And it was just like this amazing experience, like realizing that like in my discomfort, like that there was this beauty happening around me, and that it really wasn't uncomfortable at all. It was actually amazing and beautiful. And it was really nice to have a different perspective and have two people having two totally different experiences hiking in the dark. It was a good reminder. Also having people who are positive around you and like making sure that when you go out with people and that the people you choose to be with are hopefully of like mind or of like attitude.
Definitely hiking at night is one of the funnest activities you can do. Like it needs to be like in a group. I don't recommend anyone going out, you know, into the wilderness at night without a flashlight or anything like that. But going out with a group and being prepared is so fun. It is kind of like a roller coaster ride, you know?
Yeah.
Positive people help.
And it was amazing the different things we saw. Like, you know, he was like, look at the stars, look at the sunset. I'm like, did you see all the spiders on the trail? And he's like, what spiders? I'm like, every spider on the trail. There were so many spiders that came out at night. And like, that was me seeing all my fears.
Yeah, the scorpions come out at night too. You can see them really clearly.
Another fun thing that happens when you hike at night is the spiders will cast webs across the trail. And if you're leading the hike, you're breaking through all the spider webs. And that's kind of creepy, but kind of fun at the same time.
Slow motion, the spider is now behind you in the back of your head.
Hoping it's not crawling down my neck or something.
So you mentioned finding people that are positive. Do you find that to be difficult? Do you find that you have to go out with a number of groups until you find the right group? Or do you find that it sort of self-selects and the people who stick with these activities tend to be more positive people?
That's a good question.
I think it's yes to a little bit of everything, because I think when you're just starting out, it's very hard to find people that you're comfortable with and that you feel like they're going to, you know, accept you for your, you know, novice, you know, or beginner status. And, you know, you don't want to be chasing somebody. You don't want to feel like you're holding them back, right? You don't want to go out with people that are doing crazy things. You want to go out with people you can trust. And I think that does take a while. There's a lot of different groups that you can hike with, and there's culture to consider as well.
I think a lot of the negative people don't even show up because they've already got it in their mind that all these bad things are going to happen and that they got to be somewhere the next morning and whatever. So most of them, I would say, don't even show up. I find a lot of positivity out there.
Yeah. And I would just say, like, at least being with people who are compassionate, because we all have our moments. And so, you know, when you're scared, when things aren't going well, like we've all had our hangry moments where we're like low on food. Like, it's not to say that we should all be skipping down the trail and like, you know, holding hands, like, and, you know, like seeing the sunshine and rainbows and like unicorns. It's like, yay, because you're going to have bad moments. But it's in those moments finding people who are compassionate and who are going to support you and understand. And, you know, to Jason's point, a lot of times those moments, which at the time seem like not so fun and not so great, are the best stories later. So I think it's about like finding just people who are going to be kind, right? So even kind in your dark moments.
And balance you out,
yeah. Mm-hmm. I think having a good balance.
I think that's a good point about the compassion, because it's one thing to find passionate people, and it's another thing to find empathetic, understanding people. And I do think that's a thing that even scares a lot of beginners or just inexperienced people away, is this assumption that I'm going to be the inexperienced one, and I'm going to be annoying, and no one's going to respect me or want me around because I'm going to bring down the group. Do you guys have any thoughts about that concern that people tend to have?
Again, it's pick who you're with. Because not to be mean, but the reality is if you're a beginner, you probably are going to be slower. You probably are going to be more scared. You probably are all those things. And so you want to find people who are going to show you, you know, support you and like give you tips and tricks and not just say things like, oh, it's not that hard, right? Or, oh, it's not that scary, right? Because to them it's not. And you're thinking, this is the scariest thing I've ever done in my life. And it may not be scary to them. So finding people who are going to help you get through those moments and sort of let you be yourself, because everyone has to be beginner. So I think, and also being honest with people. So if you are a beginner and if you do have your fears, let people know. Because coming in the trip, say, you know, like, I'm scared of heights, or I'm not sure about this rock scrambling thing, but I'm willing to give it a try. I think people are going to then know. And if they say, no problem, we'll help you, we'll show you the way, that's great. If they give you a sideways look and are like, oh, really? Like, you're scared of heights? You know, maybe that's not who you want
to
be.
But, you know, I would also add, for beginners out there, you also have to take some responsibility.
Totally.
You can't just say, oh, I want to show up and, gosh, will people be holding my hand and I want people to, you know, tell me what I need to bring. No, it's imperative that you do some homework. You need to find out, what do I need to bring? And by the way, where am I going? How far is it? Am I willing to be able to stand up and say, gosh, this is too hard, I'm going to turn around, you know, and kind of have your bailouts in place, but and be okay with that, but also have a good attitude. You might suffer going up a steep climb. Well, maybe that's not the best place to start.
I think this is a great point, because we're talking about finding other people and then looking at how other people are and then having expectations for them. But you are 100% right. You need to look at how you show up. You need to show up and realize you're part of a group and you need to participate. You are not hiring guides, and therefore you shouldn't show up and expect everyone else to have all the answers, everyone else to do all the work, and then you to just come along and have a great time and then anchor everyone else down.
Yeah, you have to be proactive, no doubt about it.
On that note, there's so many ways to get educated about the outdoors. There's so many resources out there to start learning, you know, to show up and with some sort of knowledge. I mean, I don't know if you guys want to talk about REI stuff.
Oh, we've got some great classes at REI. There's some free classes that REI stores put on, you know, every week that will help beginners get started and learn what you have to do. We've got an amazing website with, you know, expert advice, checklists for camping and hiking and backpacking and all that. And how to buy this, how to buy that. There is an abundance of information out there. And so there's really no excuse for anybody to show up without a clue.
Yeah, and I believe that whoever is creating this event and inviting their friends is giving a clear description of what to expect. And with that, you need to make a mature choice whether you're ready for that, or you need to hire a guide or take some of these classes to prepare yourself for this event. And also being mature enough that if you are at the trailhead and you know you are way over your head listening to this conversation of what's coming forward, to step out, and then that being okay. I always say, like, up on the mountain, you know, or away from cell service in these places, the person you are with, do you trust this person with your life? Because it might come down to you too. And just being mature on the mountain and understanding that Mother Nature is greater than all of us.
Yeah, and I would say, just to Jason's point, don't just assume because something's listed or there's a group hike that they're going to be responsible for you. Like, you know, with meetups or, like, you know, especially when you're going with strangers and people you don't know, there is a personal responsibility to have of your own personal safety and not putting that on other people, unless you're hiring a professional guide to go on a guided trip. Then there's a little bit more onus on the guides, and they may or may not turn you around. But I think there's definitely taking that personal responsibility. And it's funny, we were talking, like, one of my very first snowshoeing trips, it was like a life-changing event. I was like, it was the most amazing. It was Ice House Canyon and it was a fresh snow and we were like the first tracks up. It was just like this blissful day. And I just remember at one point being like, if anything happened to my two friends, I'm screwed. Like, I have no idea how to get back. I'm just not prepared. Like, if anything happens to them, and of course nothing did. And then I ended up signing up for the Wilderness Travel Course with the Sierra Club. Mm-hmm. And so that's in Los Angeles. That's a great resource. And it's like a 10-week course. And I was like, because I didn't want to be that person.
Right.
Like, I didn't want to be that person that if something went wrong, that I was more of a liability.
So even if you take a trip with a guide, you know, we did the skied the out route through France and to Switzerland year before last, and we had a guide that was a kind of a friend of ours, but knew the route, but we studied the route and we made sure that we knew where we were going, what our outs were, and, you know, what our resources were. But, you know, sadly, a group that was out the following week or two after we went out, they were led by one guide who died. He fell into a crevasse, and these people were stuck. And the majority of them, I think 7 out of 10 perished because they were stuck in a snowstorm and they couldn't get to the hut. They were very close, but they perished because they had no idea where they were. They had no idea how to navigate. They had no idea how to save themselves. And so that's a very extreme, you know, circumstance, but everybody has to take some personal responsibility. If you want to try something new, you got to do some preparation. You got to do some work because, you know, you can't rely on everybody all the time.
Even when you show up for something guided, which hopefully you're not starting with something where it can lead to death in a crevasse and people starving to death. But regardless of what you're doing, you shouldn't think of yourself as a passenger. That's kind of the dirty word of the outdoors is passenger. Like, those are the people who don't get invited back. The people who show up, they don't participate, and then they expect everyone else to carry them through. So even in the circumstance of a guided trip, yes, the guides know what you're doing. They're the ones who are most prepared, but you should still think of yourself as a participant. If you go into a guided activity and you don't leave with new knowledge and new skills, you did it wrong.
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, passengers don't come away empowered. More often than not, they're probably defeated. And I think that that's a really important point to remember.
I think part of being empowered too is trying. Try stuff. Try new stuff. Like, I always joke that at the events, like, come and, like, try mountain biking, because what you might find is that you love mountain biking and this is the best thing ever. And you might find you hate mountain biking and you never want to do it again. And that's okay. Move on to the next thing. You know, like, you don't have to love everything, and, like, find what you like. Find what you're passionate about. Find what gets you excited. Find what, like, makes you giddy, happy, or, like, enjoy it. Because if you're not enjoying it, what's the point? Try it. Maybe try more than once, because sometimes the first time isn't always, you know,
and start
fun.
With low expectations.
Totally.
Because then you will almost always exceed them.
Yeah.
Also, don't sabotage yourself. A lot of people, they say, okay, fine, I'm going to finally go do this hiking thing. And then they start at noon. They don't bring water. They don't bring food. And then they go to the most populated place on earth.
With no shade.
Right. And then they come back and they're like, yeah, I hated that.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that a little bit. Let's talk about how people sabotage themselves with their first endeavor and then just assume moving forward, oh, I hate this activity. I hate this outdoors thing. I'm not an outdoors person.
I think that that happens a lot. And oftentimes, you know, it may not even be necessarily that I'm sabotaging myself, but maybe it's the person that I'm going with, that I'm kind of choosing to go with, that's kind of setting me up for a bad dynamic or something like that. And I always see this with couples, right? You'll have, you know, somebody's going, this friend of ours, he wanted to take his girlfriend on a backpacking trip, and he chooses, you know, this 10-day, 30-mile out backpacking. And she's, I think, been backpacking maybe once. And I said, dude, you are going to blow it, you know? And sure enough, she hated it. And she never wanted to try it again. But initially, she liked the idea. And so she wanted to try it. And so it took a lot of convincing to get her to come out with the girls, who showed her how to do it right. We're not going to go up, you know, this dry, hot, steep, you know, trail. We're going to start out slow, and we're going to make sure you're prepared. You're not going to carry a pack that's too heavy. And I think that those are all, you know, that's a very common situation. The other thing is one thing that I think people can do to sabotage themselves is, for backpacking, for instance, you carry too much. And you end up, I have to bring my makeup, I have to bring this and that, and I can't live without my pillow, I can't live without this and that. And then before you know it, your pack is 50% of your body weight.
We call it packing your fears.
Packing your fear, yeah, right. And that's a big burden to carry, right? But that will ruin your trip and you'll never want to do it again.
Yeah, so I guess the advice would be, you have an interest in doing something, you do some homework up front, you know, with regards to hiking, like all trails is great. Look at photos. You can just do a search on Facebook of the location and get like current pictures of what the terrain looks like and things like that. But just doing homework up front will really be helpful. But there will still be these people who just go out and wing it.
Yeah, and I would say with anything that's quote unquote technical, so that's like mountain biking or rock climbing or even backpacking and stuff, remember that a really experienced friend isn't necessarily a teacher.
Exactly.
And there's a difference. And so that's why I go back.
That's a great point.
And so that's why I go back to like taking an REI outdoor school class, right? Take a class like where people are educators, like their job is to teach you skills and to give you the knowledge that you need. Like that cannot be underestimated in my opinion. Like if there's something that you want to do in the outdoors, take a class, like learn, you know, read about it, learn about it, but just don't assume that you're going to go wing it and it's going to be a good or bad experience.
You probably have a pretty good sense too, if you really know this person, if they are going to be a decent teacher or not. You probably have had experiences with them that have given you a sense of whether it's a good idea to go out with them or not. And you should listen to your instincts there a little bit.
And if not, you know, start on a very short day hike with that person or whatever it is, you know, just spend a little bit of time to get a feel for how they're going to, you know, how the dynamic's going to work out. Because if you hit the trail and they just take off way ahead of you and forget about you, then I think you have your answer.
I'd say here's some good tips, right? So if you've never mountain biked and somebody's going to take you mountain biking, if they don't spend 30 minutes in the parking lot at a minimum with you, going over position and skills, they just were like, let's go hit the trail. They're not teaching you how to mountain bike. If you want to learn how to stand up paddleboard and they take you to the ocean where there's waves and, you know, and swell, they're not teaching you how to paddleboard. If they take you to a lake where it's flat and calm water, they're probably going to have a better chance of teaching you how to paddleboard. So just think about little things like that, you know, that go along with the learning a new sport. Set yourself up for success.
So you mentioned earlier, Saveria, about trying things that are new and that kind of scare you. And I want to ask each of you to kind of think about a time where you've tried something new that was kind of scary. We've talked a lot about mountain biking and hiking and things like that. But I wanted to bring up something that that I did that was really scary. And I brought my kids because, you know, if you're going to die, you might as well, like, bring your family along. So we were sea kayaking in caves in Santa Cruz, like the Channel Islands out here. And of course, like going in a little bit, you know, it's like, oh, this is fun, whatever. So at one cave, you go into the large cave. I'm not sure if it was Painted Cave or what have you. And then there's another little hole that we were going to go through. And the guides, so experienced, they had coached us before on how to roll out of our kayak if the swell came up and pressed you against the ceiling of the cave. And I'm like, what?
That's not scary.
Right? And I'm like, every mother and child for themselves. So, but you know, I'm like, okay, this guy does this all the time. Like, he knows, like, we're not going to die. So, you know, so I trust him and I go into this next cave and it's pitch black. You hear sea lions barking. We turn on our headlamps. It's crazy. And then the swell happens and the ceiling gets closer and closer to my head. Then it subsides. We all lived and we got out.
That's terrifying.
Right? Right. That is like I will never forget that. But it was one of those like stressors that, you know, there's trust, there's kind of like just a really awesome experience.
You had a plan B, dump your kayak.
But anything could have happened. I think that's a very genuine fear. Mm-hmm. Anything could have happened. I mean, that's a situation where, okay, you're prepared and if it came down to it, you were just going to have to go for it, roll your kayak and get out from underneath, you know, but
I'm
going
to add in because I just had this memory. There was also a seal that was half eaten probably by a shark.
Yes.
Those sharks have to eat something.
Talk about casting a pall over the entire thing. Wow.
So who's next?
So I got to tell you my story.
Yeah.
About 10 years ago, maybe a little less, I climbed a mountain in Patagonia. It was called Cerro Solo. And so, you know, it's involved the whole, you know, pre-dawn start. And we had to, as we're climbing the mountain, you have to go over these glaciers, so this big glacier. And so we had a guide, and he's leading us. It's my husband and then me in that order. And so he's taking his ice axe, and he's, you know, feeling for the crevasses because it had snowed. So he's got to be careful, you know, identify where the snow bridges are and identify where the crevasses are. So we had to actually climb over these crevasses. I was the lightest one, so I went last. You know, after hours and hours, we made it to the summit. It was so beautiful, gorgeous, probably one of the most beautiful peaks I've ever climbed. But then we have to go down. Well, it turns out I'm the smallest, the lightest. I have to lead. And it turns out we have to go down the same path that we came up, because that's where we know where the crevasses are. So I come to this crevasse and I stop and I turn around to the guide. Well, now what? You have to jump. So I have to jump over the crevasse and land on the snow bridge. And we're on this very, very steep mountain. And that was just terrifying to me, because one, I'm jumping down. If I fall, am I going to fall? Well, I've got my crampons, I've got my ice axe, I'm on belay. But that was just terrifying, because the other thing is then, okay, if I jump and I land on that snow bridge, is it going to hold me? And that was probably one of the scariest things, you know, I've ever done. And I have fallen through a snow bridge before.
What happened to the heaviest person goes first?
On the way down, it doesn't work like that. But that was pretty terrifying. But I'll tell you what, I mean, I still am exhilarated
you
by that.
You jumped over a crevasse.
Oh, multiple. Like, multiple crevasses.
Is super badass.
And, but the funny thing is, it's something that I really didn't realize going into it. You know, I mean, I've climbed a bunch of different mountains, but I've never had to hop over crevasses, big, yawning, gaping crevasses. And that was pretty terrifying. But like I said, I still, it's super exhilarating, and
you
I'm alive.
You want to trip over your laces.
I'm alive, so there's not a lot that scares me anymore. How about you, Saveria?
Oh, I mean, I'm still scared of heights. And I'm a rock climber, so I think rock climbing helped me. I can't even say it helped me get over it. It helped me become more comfortable mm-hmm. with heights. But yeah, I think that I still battle with like exposure, edges, whether it's on, I mean, we can be on a trail, and if there's like a mm-hmm. steep drop off or exposure, that's something that I still constantly battle with even today.
When you're climbing mm-hmm. and you're attached to the rope mm-hmm. and everything, is that different though?
It helps because like
gotta be different now.
Because I trust the system.
Yep.
Right.
Exactly.
So that's why I don't boulder.
Okay. Yeah.
Because bouldering, there's no ropes involved.
Yeah, you just
and
drop every, like dead
yeah,
weight.
Yeah, like every fall's a ground fall. The interesting thing with climbing is that you're so focused at the world in front, like right in front of you.
Yeah. In the moment.
You're so in the moment, and you're so present. And I think that's one of the reasons I love it, because you can't be thinking about anything else.
You're focusing on the task at hand,
not what's below you, not what's above you. And it's funny because like I have a decent, like I said, fear of heights. Like even backpacking, like exposed trails or like whatever. Like people always like, whenever people like walk to the edge, like to take the picture on the rock, I'm always like, no, you're not a body length away. Like I totally like, or when they sit and dangle their feet, I'm like literally like my hands are sweating, like just watching them, and I'm like really far away. So I have like a very serious concern of heights, but. You know, but I've also led like vertical, hundreds of feet of vertical wall in, you know, Red Rock or other places where you look at those pictures and you're like, what? Like, how are you just hanging out with like two little chains? You know, like for me, for some reason, that's fine. It's really weird. But it's one of the ways it's helped me like get over that fear of heights, or at least become confident in my ability of, and also being like, yeah, I'm very self-aware. Like, I don't like the edge.
I think a lot of inexperienced people assume that they're afraid of a ton of things and no one else is afraid of anything. And I always tell them, everyone you go out with is afraid of something. And if you ask them, they'll probably tell you what it is. And if they tell you they're not, they haven't found what they're afraid of yet.
I like that.
Because everyone has something. Like for me, I have claustrophobia. And I don't have extreme claustrophobia, like I'm not afraid to be in an elevator or something. But as soon as I get in a situation where I feel like the potential for paralysis is a possibility, I have a really hard time dealing with that. And so that's mine. And then other people have heights and other people have other things. But everyone you go out with has something. So hopefully you're going out with someone who can recognize that, understand what yours is. And like you were saying, Saveria, not just be like, oh, it's not so bad, but understand, oh, the way they feel about this is how I feel about this. So maybe I can try to help them through it the way someone would hopefully help me through that other thing. What are all of your individual like big fears? I know you have them. What are they?
Mine's yours.
Oh, you have the same?
Yeah, I have the same. So, you know, I'm not going to go into some tiny little cave. Just not going to do it.
Heights in nighttime. I'm not a fan of like hiking at night, like doing things at night, because like, and what are the chances, right? I know the wilderness is home to lots of things that can eat me. And so like, if, I feel like in the day, for some reason, it's like better if in the daytime I would see them coming and be better at nighttime when they're probably also asleep or whatever. But like, so night and heights are sort of my thing.
Drowning?
Yeah.
that's a good one. I can't imagine why.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I think something for people to remember too is because we all think our fear is the logical one, right? Like it's really easy for me to think about claustrophobia and be like, well, I really can pin my body and then I can't move and then I'm stuck. So that one's logical, but you're not really going to fall off a building. So fear of heights is illogical, but it's not. The way you feel about yours is exactly how they feel about theirs. And so what you think, like, for me in a tight space, there are ways I can maneuver and get out, but my heart's beating, my mind's racing, and I feel like I can't. And that's how that person feels about heights, about water, about whatever else. And so try to keep that in mind when they're dealing with that situation.
Good point.
Yeah. And also talking through like, what's the reality of like, okay, so what are the consequences, right? Potentially, or what are the chances, or what are, you know, so if this does happen, like if you come across a mountain lion, what does that actually mean? Right. How likely is it that you're going to get attacked? Cindy, we have a whole right. List. I mean, and the other reality too, is like when you're doing these adventurous things, there's inherent danger in everything that we do. And so if we didn't do things because we thought they were unsafe, we wouldn't do anything. And the reality is our everyday life is probably so much more dangerous than a lot of the things that we perceive as dangerous. Like getting in the car on the highway in LA, probably more dangerous than going on a hike in the local mountains, even though there are things out there.
Well, every time I've ever seen a mountain lion, it's always run away from me.
Yeah, think about like scaredy cat. Like the phrase came from for a reason. Like cats are pretty skittish.
Well, animals in general, especially in the wild, don't want anything to do with you. With some exceptions, the grizzly bears in Yellowstone, that's improving. But once they associate humans with food, that changes the dynamic. But overall, when you're out in the wilderness, the animals, if they see you or smell you coming first, you're not going to see them.
This is something I think people should remember. We have hospitals, so we have trained ourselves to recognize, oh, if I get injured, someone can hurt me. Animals don't have hospitals. They naturally let their fear win, because if they get injured, they die. And so an animal is less likely to take a chance than a human is. So when you run into a wild animal, unless it's something like a grizzly, which is more aggressive and way larger than you and can easily defeat and devour you, most animals are doing that math in their head, even a mountain lion, because a mountain lion looks at you and thinks, that thing's large, it could fight back, it could break my leg, then I will die. A rat cannot hurt me. I will go find a rat. And so that's what you can tell yourself to
right.
help
okay,
you remember.
This is my favorite takeaway. It's my favorite takeaway from this whole thing.
So what I got from it are grizzly bears are stupid because they actually think we do have a hospital bears.
No, grizzly bears are apex predator and like we are lower than them on the food
grizzly
chain.
Bears don't have to worry about us unless
they
we have
hurt
guns.
Us.
But they
right.
can hurt us.
They can hurt us more easily than we can hurt them.
But there's ways to deal with that. So like, hike in groups of four or more, or like bring your bear spray. Like, so again, like even those things that are super scary and the consequences could be super dire. Like the people who get attacked by grizzly bears are usually by themselves. There's usually food involved or they scare them or, you know, things like that.
They were running with headphones on.
Yep.
So, and I mean, ran like into two mating grizzlies or something. That did happen. It did happen. Wow. It was not pretty for anybody involved.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, so there's also ways to mitigate those risks.
Definitely.
So,
well, it's just paying attention. That's the getting back to being in the moment. When you go outdoors, look where you're going. People, I hear all the time, they're afraid of snakes. Ah, what if I see a snake? Well, avoid it, right? You know, step back, give it the snake its space, but you have to be paying attention. And that kind of gets back to that responsibility aspect of it. Look, snakes are not coming looking for you. They're just not. Now, can a snake crawl into your tent if you leave it open and you're gone and, you know, it's warm? They might want to go in there and explore. Yeah. Zip your tent. You know, check your shoes for scorpions before you put them on, right? Maybe every once in a while a bug will crawl in a shoe, but just be aware. Pay attention. Be present.
Go back to being present.
Speaking of snakes and scorpions and things like that, it also comes down to your environment. certain parts. Like if you're in the West where we are, snakes are almost not a concern at all. The only snake you have to worry about is the rattlesnake, and more often than not, it lets you know it's there. Where I grew up, there are a lot more venomous water snakes and just more snakes in general, and so it's a little more of a concern, and so maybe in the South you need to take more precautions to deal with snakes. So kind of find out in your area. You probably already have a sense of what there is to be concerned about. So yeah, do a little bit of research. You don't have to do a whole lot.
The information is freely available wherever you're going. If it's in your national forest, if it's a national park, you are going to find that information online, very easily accessible, and they're going to tell you exactly what to do, what not to do. It's simple. And once you do the homework, you take control of what you can control and prepare for it, and you're going to be great. You're going to set yourself up for success. You're not going to have that grizzly encounter with that, you know, bear or that snake. You know, don't go hopping through the bushes blindly, right? I mean, it's very simple things.
Stay on trail.
I have almost danced on top of a snake because I was just haphazardly dancing through a field without paying attention to what I was doing.
Whoops.
So maybe don't do that. So one of the things we talked about earlier is discomfort. And I think as much as fear keeps people away, it's fear of discomfort. So let's talk about those things like you mentioned earlier, Marilee, about I have to bring my pillow if I'm going to sleep outside, or I have to do this. Or like you mentioned, Severia, you can't control the temperature. So it might be sweaty, you might be cold. People stop themselves because they think they can't handle discomfort. So what do you all have to say about that?
Plan ahead and prepare.
Bottom line.
Yeah, so many of the discomforts are because you're not prepared. I think if you prepare, then a lot of times that's takes away, I would say, like 80 to 90% of the quote-unquote discomforts or things that you make.
I think there's an acceptance of that you will be uncomfortable and that you will encounter wildlife and the unexpected will happen. And when you kind of like accept this going in.
Well, when we learn something, whether you're going to school, you're going to college, you're learning something new, there's always discomfort involved, right? And there's varying degrees. There's just the, again, it might be the ego, oh, I feel stupid, I'm not getting this, or it's cold, I can't warm up, that's kind of uncomfortable, but maybe I'm not going to die, but I just don't like being cold. There's my feet hurt, we have 5 miles to go, my feet are killing me. You know, there's varying degrees of discomfort. If we don't push ourselves, then we don't grow as humans. And that's on any level. And I think that, that you have to go into it. Again, that kind of ties back into our discussion about attitude. You're going to have to go in. If you want to try something new, you're going to have a little bit of fumbling, bumbling, suffering, mental, physical. Now, there's a difference between discomfort and outright pain, right? And that's, I think that's a very important distinction. If you're having physical pain, you know, maybe you're doing something wrong. Maybe you're doing something you probably shouldn't be doing. Maybe you're in over your head. You know, you have to be very cautious of that distinction as well.
Look at what we've done to ourselves. Like we used to work out in the fields and we get all sweaty and, you know, and not have electricity and all this. And we've created like the perfect temperature zone. You know, our bed is exactly the sleep number that makes us comfortable at night. We can watch National Geographic on television. So why do I have to get off my couch? But just that experience of like hearing a noise outside of your tent or your mattress pad like deflating in the middle of the night and feeling that rock underneath you or whatever. It's fun. It's different. I don't know. You have to have new experiences just to be a whole person. I don't know. I believe nature's where it's at.
Yeah, and I would say like be kind to yourself. Because when you're learning something new, it's usually is a little uncomfortable and it's a little stressful and it may not be as much fun. And so everybody around you is having fun and you're like, this isn't really fun yet to me. But just remember, like, be kind to yourself, especially if you're learning something new. It may take a while. Like, it may take a little bit.
And you can control the extent and how much and how long you're going to endure. And that's why I always say, stand up and take control. Okay, I'm going to do this in a very measured way. That way, okay, I want to push myself to a certain degree, but I don't want to overdo it. That's a very easy thing to do is, okay, I'm going to jog down this trail until it doesn't feel good. Then I'm going to walk, right? I mean, simple as that.
So then look what's happened to all of us. And we have many friends that this discomfort zone that we're talking about is our comfort zone. Wouldn't you rather be sleeping out underneath the stars, listening to howling
wild
wolves or whatever.
Coyotes.
And then going to work every day.
Oh, definitely.
That is definitely my comfort zone.
It's addicting.
Yeah.
It's addicting. I think discomfort can be addicting, like pushing yourself to try a new experience or to see how long, you know, how fast I can run this trail or ride this mountain bike loop or how fast can I climb this mountain. But again, it all starts with baby steps. And you make progress, and then you push yourself a little bit further, and you can decide how far you want to go. It's up to you.
What's real and what's not as important. I think that's what nature like gives to all of us.
I think it's also perspective. You know, when you're a little bit out of your comfort zone, it maybe makes you appreciate a little bit more too the creature comforts we do have at home. You know, when you spend a weekend you've been hot and sweaty and you're battling dehydration and, you know, looking for water, when you come home and you are drinking your filtered water out of your sink and it's nice and cold and you're back in your air conditioning house, you know, I love coming home. As much as I love being out and like doing those things, like I love my bed, I love my pillows, and I love the memory foam, you know, on my bed. So it's like, and I think that's great too. Like I think it being out, yeah, it's a balance. It helps provide perspective. And
but the more time you spend in your discomfort zone, the more comfortable you become with it, you know. And that's kind of the, you know, the funny thing about it. It's like, okay, you know, then you can, you know, push yourself to explore more, but it just gets better and better.
And Saveria mentioned fun, and I think an important thing for people to remember, nothing in life can be fun 100% of the time. And so if you're miserable part of the times, or if you just feel really challenged, or you think, well, this part's not fun, that's okay, because look at your day-to-day life, and how often do you wake up and have fun until you go back to sleep? Probably never. And there are probably many things you do in your day-to-day life that you think are rewarding and challenging that aren't particularly fun. And so have those same expectations when you go outside. Don't show up and expect, I'm going to try mountain biking today, and it's going to be fun from beginning to end, because then you're going to be very let down. But if you go in with realistic expectations, you might find out there's more to it than just fun.
There are two types of fun in this world. There's type one fun. And that's just fun. That's like you're just having a good time skipping around. Then there's type two fun. And that type two fun doesn't always feel fun, but it's fun when you're done because you've made it to the top of that mountain.
Wasn't fun. Type two. Wasn't fun in the moment, but it makes a great story. And looking back on it, maybe it wasn't so bad.
Right. And I survived.
And then there's type three, right? Not fun in the moment.
Type three, you never do
after.
That, whatever it was again.
Yeah. Not fun during, not fun after, will never be fun. Never be looked fun as well.
So what I think a lot of this conversation turned into is basically why discomfort zones are important and maybe are the new comfort zones, and why getting into your discomfort zone is rewarding and worth your time. So what is the final word you guys want to leave with everybody about this conversation so far?
Be willing to be uncomfortable. I guess I get out of your comfort zone, embrace it. You never know what you might find.
I think, Saveria, I think that you said that very well. What she said.
Being uncomfortable in the outdoors has really like grounded me in my day-to-day walk. That's what I want for everybody. We live in a super stressful world. I want calmness for everybody, and find nature and ground yourself.
Yeah, I think the world would be a much more beautiful place if everybody made it a priority to get outside and disconnect from our civilized world and, you know, spend out a little bit of time with Mother Nature for a little reboot. Clear your mind and kind of help you get down to what's really important. I think it has a very calming effect. So I encourage everybody to try to carve out some time in your day, either once a day or once a week, whatever you can do. There's just a world of advantage for you. So go for it. Get out there.
Go ahead and everybody share where people can find you. And then also if there are any resources you think they should look into that you haven't already mentioned.
So this is Saveria, and you can find me at Adventurous Woman. And it's Adventurous, like us, like we are all Adventurous. So US, adventurouswoman.com. And on Instagram and Facebook.
This is Cindy Wyatt. You can find me at Instagram, Cindy, CYNDI, _skyrunner_Wyatt. And on Facebook, Cindy Wyatt. And some resources, rei.com/learn.
This is Marilee. And you can find me on Facebook. It's M-A-R-I-L-E-E, V like Victor, A-L,
K-A-S-S. That's pretty much the best place to find me, or find me at REI in Burbank. I teach a number of classes there. You know, I'm just going to reiterate Cindy's pointing out that, you know, REI's got some wonderful resources, REI.com/learn.
All right. I think that's our show. Thank you for coming out here and going from one park to another until we find one without construction equipment.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
And if you or a friend or family member are interested in taking part in one of Saveria's Adventurous Women excursions, now is a great time. 2020 registration for events is open, and if you use this code GOGO150, you will get $150 off of your event. So head over to Adventurous Women and register now if you would like to get in on some of those events in 2020 and save some money. And while you're at it, you should run to our website, gogetoutside.com. Look for this episode 92. Not only will you find the link to Adventurous Woman, but links to all the things we talked about in today's show, photographs, and also a video from today's guest all about dealing with the three P's, that is peeing, pooping, and periods in the outdoors. So if you'd like to hear more from today's guest as Chickaboom TV, go check out that episode on our website. And if you would like to get in touch with us here at the show, if you'd like to comment on this episode, past episodes, future episodes, there are a number of ways to make that happen. You can always send us an email, go@butcherbirdstudios.com, or leave us a voicemail or send us a text at 818-925-0106. And if you want to help the Go Get Outside podcast begin 2020 right, please head to your podcast purveyor of choice, subscribe to the show, rate and review it if possible, and share it with someone who would benefit from this show. This episode of the Go Get Outside podcast was produced, recorded, and edited by me, your host, Jason Milligan. Additional help was provided by Griffin Davis, and as always, it has been brought to you by Butcher Bird Studios. Next time on the show, join us January 16th for Rowan Smith, Aussie and personal trainer for trekkers and mountaineers. He will be sharing his personal story, but also explaining how adventure training is different from traditional exercise or weightlifting, and how that training can benefit you in the outdoors. Come back January 16th, Rowan Smith. See you then.